Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hi, before we talk to Doug and Emmy Joe from the Newzoo Review, I still can't believe it, let's talk about our Patreon page at patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. You know this podcast is almost entirely fueled by our Patreon subscribers, so if you dig what you hear today, please consider signing up for just $5 per month on our Patreon page. Not only will you get access to the Shadow Docket shows twice per week, but you're also going to get to download the Patreon app. You'll be able to comment under each episode, and you can even post your own blog entries on the member posts tab as well. Plus, you'll be supporting this fully independent podcast as we guide you through the chaos of our politics. So get going. Again, that's BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. And now let the cartoons begin.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
I think it's the best show on the air ever that has been. It's weird how good it is. It's so strange.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, October 11, 2023, and this is the Bob Seska Interview on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 994 of the Biden-Harris administration, 390 days until the 24th presidential election. You can find me on Threads and Instagram at the Bob Seska, Twitter, BobSeska_go, Spoutable Bob Seska, and our Patreon page is BobSeskaShow.com. So, if you were a kid in the 1970s, as I was, chances are you recognize my guests today. Doug and Emmy Joe from the Newzoo Review are here today. One of those iconic, one-of-a-kind kid shows from my generation. In fact, chances are you remember all the words from the theme song, too. Not to mention the animals on the show, Freddie, Charlie, Henrietta. For so many of us, Doug and Emmy Joe were kind of like our TV parents. And by the way, I usually don't use video to record this podcast, but when we connected on Zoom, Doug and Emmy Joe had their video camera turned on, and it was like, boom, there they were, smiling back at me. And most importantly, they were joined by Freddy the Frog. Freddy the Frog was standing there. I was looking at Freddy the Frog while we were recording this interview. This is mind-blowing. So I actually got to see them face-to-face as we talked, and I have to say, I've done hundreds of these shows by now, so I don't usually get nervous talking to a guest. But oh my God, I was nervous today. And by the way, make sure to follow Doug and Emmy Joe on Facebook. The page is called The Newzoo Review. Make sure to include the. Link in the description under this episode at BobSeska.com. Meantime, don't forget to support this podcast by subscribing to our Patreon page, BobSeskaShow.com. Okay, here we go. This is my talk with, I can't believe it, Doug and Emmy Joe from the Newzoo Review. Mind blown.
More fun, more news. The Bob Seska Show. La 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 la. It's the Newzoo Review. Coming right at you.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to have to turn on my video now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
This is special.
This is incredible. I do an audio-only show, but I'm standing here looking at Doug and Emmy Joe with Freddie the Frog. This is just...
Yes.
This is just so wonderful. Thank you so much for being here on the show with me today. Hi, Freddie. There he is. So anyway, I was basically the target demographic of that show. I mean, when it started, I was about a year old. And when it went off the air, I was about six in 1977. Yeah. And everyone I talked to, every time I mentioned the show, especially when I mentioned that you were both going to be on the show today, the response is universal. Everyone remembers New Zoo Review. Everyone can sing every last lyric of that theme song. You're basically like the Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks of children's shows for Gen X. You know what I mean?
How about that?
Hi, Freddie. Oh, and you can be, let's see, Mick Fleetwood. Freddie can be Mick Fleetwood. So, Doug, when you first created this show, when you first sat down to conceive of the New Zoo Review, did you ever imagine we'd be sitting here 50 years later talking about it?
Never. Never. You know, when you're, as a writer, as a composer, you never know how it's going to be taken, how people are going to react to it. And you just wanted to communicate. I wanted it to communicate the essence of the show when right. when I wrote the theme song. And so I had to put all the elements in 60 seconds.
Right, right.
The initial song I wrote was 3 minutes long, but I had to cut it down. But you'd never imagine that 50 years later, that song would be rattling around in people's heads, you know?
And yeah, exactly.
I'm just so, it's so gratifying to me that that it has had this longevity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, along with Sesame Street and Fred Rogers and, of course, the Sid and Marty Krofft shows, New Zoo Review was one of the most influential shows of my generation. So let's talk about origins. When and how did you first connect with Barbara Atlas, Doug? How did this concept first emerge? And what was that like in the early part of developing the entire show?
Well, as I've said, my mom worked at a toy store.
Yeah.
And the owner of the toy store had a beanbag frog named Freddie. She named it Freddie. And she
that was Barbara.
Yeah, that was Barbara, who owned the store.
Yeah.
And she asked my mom, she said, you know, I want to do a kid show. You know anybody that could help me? Well, my mom, being a good mom, said, well, my son is a playwriting major at Cal State Fullerton. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he could come up with something. Yeah, and so she invited me in to, went in to meet with Barbara. And Barbara said, here, can you do a show around this frog? So I went home and I started thinking about a theme song, thinking about a title, thought, hey, New Zoo Review. And so it all just kind of happened. I wrote the theme song, sketched out the set, created Freddie, his personality, Henrietta Hippo. I thought having a hippo on would be just too funny.
Incredible.
You know, and then we also had Charlie.
Who used to be a giraffe.
It was really?
Yeah. Because I've got the original drawings that Doug did, and Charlie was a giraffe. And then the costume was too difficult. And he actually was not Doug. He was the Nothany Zoo. That was going to be his name.
And oh, my God. What is the name again? How do you say that?
Zanophany Zoo.
That's incredible. So New Zoo Review.
We were essentially zookeepers.
Yeah.
That was the whole. And the review was, is that we would be changing hats and doing different roles. So that's why it's R-E-V-U-E. So the whole thing kind of morphed into what you see now, which was just mind blowing.
And we were actually coming back from our wedding. Mm-hmm. And those days you could get stationery from the airlines. And I have the American Airlines stationery where Doug sketched out the set. And he would think, what do you think about this? What do you think with the elevator? And of course, the designers refined it and made it into what you see on television. But it was interesting for me to see the creative process.
Yeah. Emmy Jo, were you directly involved with the development of the show when it first originated? So what was your connection? How did you, were you in a relationship with Doug at that time? And you were both working on it? At the same time. So he was working on it and you were kind of consulting with him, or were you?
We were engaged to be married.
Okay.
And he's the creative one. Mm-hmm. I'm an actress. I have a strong background in theater.
Yeah.
And I just happened to be engaged to the right person at the right time. Because he wrote me into the show.
Well, I went to her and I said, hey, would you want to be in a kid's show with me? Mm-hmm. I have this odd, you know, and she said, yeah, that would be fun.
So it was great. It was a great thing to do together. It really was.
So the development of the animal characters is utterly fascinating to me. So take me through the process of creating these costumes, these designs for these characters. I imagine you went through many iterations. Obviously, there was a giraffe at one point.
Yeah, we did.
Was there a whole development process in terms of how the characters would look, or did Freddy come out basically the way we see him here, or was there an entire process where you're drawing up sketches and concept art and coming up with ideas like that?
Well, the brilliant designers at Sid and Marty Croft's office, they actually built the original costumes.
Oh, really?
And did the initial sketches, and we approved them. And that's how the characters evolved, because they built the costumes. They didn't have anything to do with the production of the show, but they constructed the costumes, and we went and looked at them. And I changed a few things because I wanted more expression on Freddy's, you know, face, where he could be animated and doing things, and he would come alive to the kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the whole point. I wanted his eyes to move. I didn't want him to be just stationary. You know, Henrietta's eyes, if you notice, there are eyebrows working all the time.
Yeah.
And their arms, and everything had to be real to the kids and to us, because we're acting with them. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, the physical construction was Sid and Marty Croft. But the characterization, that was me trying to refine what I thought kids would find funny and interesting. Yeah. You know, because Freddie was our little boy. Mm-hmm. Henrietta was a Southern belle that I thought, wow, that would be great for her to be reacting to Freddie and her. And then Charlie the Owl was this goofy scientist who would invent things mm-hmm. that never worked. But he would always do his best and try. And so everyone had their role.
Yeah.
And then Emmy Jo and I were the zookeepers, but we were really, you know, friends of theirs. Mm-hmm. And so the whole show was built around relationships. How do you get along? How do you get along with your brother, your sister, your mom, mm-hmm. you know, your cousin, and your teachers?
Yeah.
And that's kind of been the combination of character and characterization, both physically and mentally, is what we brought to the screen.
So the connection with Sid and Marty Croft, that's fascinating, because I find sometimes when I mention New Zoo Review, or I, you know, maybe post a photo on social media or something like that, the reaction is inevitably someone's going to come into the comments and say, oh yes, I love those Croft shows. And there's kind of a confusion there, but it's purely inadvertent, because the shows were quite different. Sid and Marty Croft mm-hmm. were doing one kind of thing, and you all were doing something different. But now that you've mentioned the fact that the Croft people were integral in developing the costumes, well, the overlap is now completely obvious to me. So that's utterly fascinating. Yeah.
But if you notice, their costumes are nothing like our costumes.
Right, right.
I mean, really, you know, because we were going for the, how would a frog really be? How would a hippo really be? How would an owl be?
Right.
And so it was interesting to see the development.
Yeah. In fact, speaking of Charlie the Owl, I used to always get a little freaked out when I'd notice the actor's human hands under the feathers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like the gloves.
Yeah, exactly.
They were like the gloves, but, feathers on top.
The costumes were quite ingenious, and I think that's one of the things that really sold the show, because I remember when I was watching the show, I kind of wanted a costume like that. I kind of wanted like a Charlie Owl or a Freddy the Frog costume, because they were so well done and they were so interesting looking. And of course, the fact that there was a 6 foot tall frog with a turtleneck in the show is just utterly fascinating to me. So these characters are all kind of archetypes, not necessarily reflecting childlike behavior, but I mean, I think Freddy primarily along those lines. It's interesting looking back, because I find that shows, children's shows, especially of the 70s, were much more aspirational, where shows didn't necessarily have to show children all the time on screen. You know what I mean? And this show, obviously hosted by two grown-ups, and then with these larger-than-life animal characters, provided a different, I guess, a different entry point for children. Like they didn't, we didn't necessarily see, I didn't see myself on screen. I saw aspects of my life. And in fact, both of you were kind of like my TV parents. You, at the time, you even kind of looked like my parents. And so that, I think that was another entry point. But in terms of relating to children, how did you make that connection with your audience?
Well, we like children.
Yeah.
And I think Doug and I both have kind of childlike, a childlike aspect to our personalities, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
But we didn't really think too much about where the children going to relate. You know, we hoped that they would, mm-hmm. but obviously they did, because what has come out of this and to see the impact that it's had on millions of children like yourself is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I have to say very, very meaningful to us and very, very rewarding.
One thing I will say, Bob, is that what we wanted to do was not talk down to kids.
No.
Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, our show was aimed at kids, but really we were dealing with emotions and situations in the storyline and the plot and the dialogue that were not kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were dealing with situational comedy, musical comedy stuff, and that was really, I was told, is above the level of the kids, but it really wasn't, because it resonated deep inside. You know, where we're talking about telling the truth, they could take that concept or the song that I wrote at the end, mm-hmm. Called Tell the Truth, and assume it.
Yeah.
And it would be part of their character. And that's what we were finding when mm-hmm. we went to Comic-Con. We had, you know, men come up crying, saying, you were my parents. You know, you exactly. taught me, yeah. You taught me morals. You taught me how to behave. Mm-hmm. Well, we were just really wanting to impart that through story and song and dialogue. So it shows you how powerful a screenplay can be.
And we had no idea how children were reacting to it. Really. Mm-hmm. We didn't.
Yeah.
But you know, when you hear people, they come up and they talk about how maybe they had a challenging childhood. It was difficult in their home. There was abuse in their home. Mm-hmm. There, we've heard from others who, you were sick a lot, were in bed a lot. And this show was a comfort to them. And it's very meaningful to yeah. me. I love our new zoo kids. You know, y'all are all calling yourselves the new zoo kids.
Oh, is that really, and is
I
that
love
a thing?
That. Yeah. I love every single one of you. We had a lot of fun passing out hugs at Comic-Con.
Do you have any?
Because it's like we're seeing these who are little children.
Yeah.
Who are now grown up living their own lives. But I feel kind of related to them. It's pretty amazing. Very proud. Very proud of all of you.
Do you have children of your own? Do you have kids?
Oh, brother? Yes.
Yeah. How many kids?
Oh, we have three.
Yeah.
Adult children. And we have 11 grandchildren.
Wow.
And our oldest daughter, and I guess we can count Freddie.
Of course. He's standing right there. Yeah.
Although if you look at him, he's ageless.
But our yes. daughter, our mm. oldest daughter, is the one who started the Facebook page. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The New Zoo Review Facebook page.
Which has been hugely successful. Didn't you just do a Facebook Live? Something like 21,000 people joined up. Yeah.
And she just came over New Year's Eve, New Year's Day.
This year.
And said, Mom and Dad, I think we need to have a Facebook page. And I just started one.
That's incredible.
And we've just watched it grow. And it's just been lots of fun.
You know, speaking of our kids, that's what we've been doing for the past 40, 50 years. You know, after the show stopped production, we had to do something. So I formed my own television production company in Las Vegas. And we've been kind of apart from New Zoo and yeah. didn't really think about it that much. We've been raising our own kids, and I was producing, directing commercials in Vegas and all across the country, really. Mm-hmm. So we didn't realize the impact that it had on this generation and other generations.
Yeah, yeah.
And till this Facebook page was launched. And now I'm seeing the work that we did that far, so long ago, being relevant today, even more so today.
Did your kids and obviously now your grandkids, have they seen the show? Have they watched the show? Do you give out DVDs at Christmas?
I'll tell you, we get no respect for it. We really intentionally, we never put it in their faces or anything like that. We just wanted them to have normal kids' childhood and not think about, oh, mom's on television or dad's on television. But now our grandchildren are beginning to see little clips of it.
Yeah.
You know, and they're proud of us.
And I think they respect it. They're proud of it.
Okay, short break. Back with more Doug and Emmy Joe right after these words.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bob Seska.
All-time favorites all day long.
So getting into the sort of the nitty-gritty of producing the show, what was sort of a typical week like in putting together an episode of Newsroom Review? Was it, did you shoot a bunch of them over the course of a few days, or was it kind of a more weekly schedule like traditional television where you prep and you get ready to rehearse and then suddenly on Fridays you're shooting the show? How did the process play out?
Well, remember when we did the show, it was 1972, and that was the era of 2-inch videotape. I mean, we're talking about the beginnings of videotape, digital, nothing digital. It was all on 2-inch tape with a machine that had to work, you know, where you pressed record and it had to record something. And so what we would do is we would go into the studio on Monday, rehearse a show with cue cards and camera blocking. Then we'd shoot those two shows on Tuesday, rehearse two shows on Wednesday, shoot those two shows on Thursday. Then on Friday, we would pre-record all the music for next week's shows.
I see.
So it was a very grueling schedule. And then we had to rely on the machinery to work, which sometimes it didn't at that time.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, during the off season, I was composing and writing the storylines and, you know, getting everything ready for the next series of shows. So it was quite a schedule, a hard schedule.
Plus you're talking about choreography too, because there was coordinated dance routines in the show.
Oh, yes.
So had to have been, the rehearsal process must have been pretty extensive throughout the production of the show. So,
well, remember, we rehearsed those two shows on Monday.
Yeah.
Including the choreography, we had to learn that choreography right there.
Yeah.
And we had to, you know those dance steps, because the next day you know, we didn't have two or three takes. They all wanted us to do this in like one take. Mm-hmm. So if you think about a 5-minute song with dialogue, we were doing that whole song as one take. Yeah. So the characters would be in costume the whole time, drenched in sweat. And
as I'm sure Freddie is right now. Yeah.
Yeah. But they would be exhausted, but would be so proud that we did it all in one take. But anyway, it was amazing that we could do it all in one take, because they switched it live in the control room, you know. And so we'd had minimal editing to do at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was a process, and it was hard. It really was.
Right. And I imagine the actors in the animal costumes were having to learn that choreography with limited visibility must have been an interesting process from the point of view of coordination and maybe mishaps along the way, as far as, you know, you trip over your own feet, I'm sure, if you've got the big Freddy feet, for example. So that must have been a challenge in and of itself. So the dancers
that were in those costumes were amazing. There's no other word for it. Larry Thomas, who was in Henrietta's costume, was one of the most famous dancers in Hollywood. And I watched a show just the other day, a clip that Doug had put up of a dance that Henrietta was doing, where she was actually throwing a temper tantrum. And she was on the floor, she was kicking her feet, she was jumping, she was turning around. And I don't know how she did it. But I have this, we even have a picture somewhere of when the number would be over, that segment would be over, and she would just be dripping with sweat.
Yeah.
I mean, those dancers worked hard, and we were very fortunate to have them.
And you're right, the set was, you know, it was the set. It was like a three-wall theater set, basically. Yeah. And so you couldn't go out of the camera range or you would be off camera.
right.
All of these numbers, you're right, we were bumping into each other on occasion and, you know, very funny stuff.
The set seemed massive to me when I was a kid watching it. Like, it really felt like an actual little courtyard with a number of different houses and things like that. It was an enormous set, which maybe today would be like half computer generated, but it was all a physical set with interiors and exteriors. And there was even a little river where Freddie would be on a boat there and a little rowboat. So it was fascinating. And plus, Charlie the Owl's set was the best part of that entire creation, because he had the treehouse and then the elevator, which was, of course, the envy of all of us watching. Like, okay, you know, if I could pick a place to live on Newsy Review, it would be Charlie Owl's place. Sorry, Freddie. Sorry. that was a fun part of it. Yeah.
But no, you're right. That was the amazing thing about the sets. They were all physical and real. There was no no green screen then.
Yeah.
Freddie's green, but we couldn't use a green screen actually. But here we are in a real world, and I think, Emmy Jo, don't you say how you thought Henrietta's house was real?
Oh, I did. I wanted to live in Henrietta's house. I just loved it. It was so, I always wanted to, you could almost believe for sure that one day Henrietta Hippo was going to invite me for tea.
Did either of you keep any of the pieces from the set? Did you the show went off the air or stopped production, did you grab something and kind of say, okay, I'm going to keep this?
I wish we had it.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've got a lot of pictures, articles, and things like that. But no, we don't have the treehouse.
When they stored everything, everything went up in flames in a fire in Hollywood.
Oh, no.
All the costumes, the sets, everything.
My boots?
Oh, the amazing Emmy Jo go-go boots. Yeah.
Emmy Jo boots are gone.
That's so sad. Horrible. Well, I at some point, I'm sure someone's going to appear somewhere and go, oh, look, I've got Freddy's head, or I've got Charlie Owl's feet or something like that. And that will, you know, maybe someone, some grip somewhere along the line, grab something and save something.
I don't think so.
That's a shame. But, you know, did you ever... you're in the middle of producing and working on the show and in that sort of daily grind. Do you ever stop and look around and go, wow, this is such a weird concept. I can't believe it's on television. Was that ever a thought that ran through either of your minds?
Yes. It was amazing. I mean, I spent a lot of time, a lot of years in legitimate theater, in my schooling and all of that, and summer stock, you name it. But sometimes I would just look around and think, this is me.
Yeah,
and I'm on television. This is for real. Mm-hmm. These cameras were, it was amazing. Yeah. I mean, I would think about all the auditions I went to in New York, and they, some of them panned out, some of them didn't pan out, but here I am with my husband on this set doing this magical show that is so much fun. It's a blessing, such a gift.
And it was wonderful to see how, you know, that we were there, and we just couldn't believe it. I mean, I just couldn't believe it.
And our cast was very close. We all enjoyed each other, and not just the cast, but the people that worked on the set, the grips and the crew.
Yeah.
We all just had a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the number of songs, I think, what is it? Something like over 600, 700 songs, somewhere in that range, were featured on that show. And Doug, did you say you wrote all of those songs? I mean, how did you possibly come up with concepts for, what is it, 660 songs? How did that, how did you do that?
Well, there was three songs per episode, mm-hmm. and it was very difficult, but it really wasn't, because I compartmentalize everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would create a story, I would think, how can I best introduce this concept in a song?
Yeah.
And then as the plot continued, how can I best further this and reveal the characterization and what they're feeling with this song? And then the final song, how can I sum that up by a song that will tell the whole story? So that's how I looked at it. And when I sat down to the piano or guitar, I would try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the ideas just came. And it was a staggering job when I look back on it. I just don't realize how I did it. And I know it was inspiration from the Lord, really, because I couldn't do it otherwise.
Yeah.
And it was just a great way to get messages across to the kids. And I just loved writing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still write now, but that was a time where I was so into writing, and it was so great.
Yeah.
And she fed me coffee.
I did. I kept the coffee going.
That's good.
And that's true. That's a true story, because there was a time when something happened. I don't remember all the circumstances, but he had to write like 30 songs in a weekend. I mean, he didn't sleep.
Wow.
He had his guitar, he had his piano, and I just remember bringing another cup of coffee. Yeah.
Well, I had to show the production company that I can write these songs.
Mm.
So I had to put them all on a reel-to-reel tape and say, here, what do you think? And they were like, okay, this kid can write. So I was like 23 years old at the time.
Was there ever any concepts that were kind of rejected? Was there a process of pitching to any executives along the way? What was the hierarchy of that process in terms of getting sign-offs from people who controlled what went on the air and what didn't?
Well, for the most part, they were very, very, you know, good in adapting and approving our concepts. But we did have some challenges.
I remember a challenge. I remember when Doug decided he wanted to do a show on Shakespeare. And nobody said you can't do it. But there were some questions about, are children going to relate to that? Is that something that is going to really go over? Will they want to see a show on Shakespeare? And Doug just stood up for his feelings on that, and we got the show in. And then he did a show on beauty, and that was another concept that was a little iffy, a show on beauty, but you stuck with it.
Yeah, we stuck with it. And I'll never forget, you know, we did a show, I wanted to do a show on greed, and we did have to go through, Mattel Toys was our sponsor the first season, so there was a hierarchy of taking the script in and, hey, how's this? Mm-hmm. Well, in Greed, I wanted Charlie the Owl to sing this song called I Got What I Need, where he's satisfied with what he has. He doesn't need anything else. Well, the toy executives say, you know, we're a toy company and we don't want people to be satisfied with what they have.
Yeah.
Because Christmas is coming up. But anyway, they, you know, I showed them that, hey, it's okay to buy new things, but you should be happy with what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so they approved the song. And to this day, you can go to the show called Greed and Charlie sings I Got What I Need, which is a honky tonk piano version of be satisfied with what you got.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah.
So we did go through a process, but for the most part, they were very good about that.
Oh, that's great. And there's one clip that I stumbled on that, boy, it just jumped off the screen for me rewatching it. And especially given a modern context of social media and the internet and things like that, it was a song called There's Too Much Criticism in the World. I think that was the name of the song. And it was both of you and Henrietta doing this song. And I was watching this. And I was going, good Lord. This is one of the best statements about modern times that emerged out of that show. It was so prescient.
We're all right.
Exactly. Everyone's got an opinion. I think that was right. One of the words. Yeah.
Everybody's
yeah.
opinion is the right one.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you better believe it. But that's the thing that I've noticed about the songs that I wrote. They're still relevant today. These
yes.
topics mm-hmm. are just evergreen, and they just speak to the audience today like I've never seen before. I never anticipated.
Yeah.
But that's a good example of that. You know, there's too much criticism in the world today, and I put that in a song.
Oh, yeah. There's so much DNA from Newser Review in a lot of modern children's shows. Obviously, nothing quite compares. But if I see a show like Yo Gabba Gabba or The Teletubbies or something like that, it kind of feels like people were watching and remembering Newser Review as they began to develop these new shows. And so that also has to be immensely gratifying that you now have all of these other shows that carry that Newser Review DNA.
Influenced by, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that's a good point, because we have seen that people have taken some of our ideas and put them in new mm-hmm. concepts and stuff. But, you know, there hasn't been a show that has had that magic that
right.
Newser Review had.
Yeah.
And I'm just so thankful for that.
Yeah.
But I'm like to see more shows that would concentrate on treating each other with respect and kindness and love, because I think that's what's missing in some of the kids shows today. Yeah.
Some of the grown-up shows as well.
Yes.
I think yeah. we all need a heavy dose of that mm-hmm. again. So what happened in 1977? What? Why did the show stop getting produced at that point? Because it could have been something that maybe could have gone on for at least another decade.
We thought it was going to go on.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. We did, but it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we moved from California to Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
and Doug established his company, or our company out there. You know, life goes on, and we just sort of went on to the second half of our
we really never knew.
Yeah.
Because we weren't really behind the scenes.
Yeah, we had no idea.
You know, we thought it would be like Sesame Street. We thought we'd do, you know, 1,000 episodes,
mm-hmm.
but it just wasn't to be. And I think, as with any show, there's all kinds of, you know, discussions about money and this and that, and producers talking back and forth, and they just decided to pull the plug. Mm-hmm. And it was a shock to us, and we really didn't understand it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had to go on. So
right,
if
right.
it was up to us, we would have gone on.
Yeah, yeah. So were there any aspirations to, dare I say, reboot Newser Review? Was that something that was ever discussed?
There was a lot of thought about that, but mm-hmm. right, you know, we were in the midst of raising our kids, and I was in the midst of running a company, and
yeah.
we just, you know, didn't have that much control over the property itself. So it was just not going to be.
Yeah.
And so we just kind of put it on the back shelf.
Mm-hmm. Until Joanna decided to do the Facebook page. It's incredible. Was on the back shelf.
Yeah. Have you entertained any ambition to maybe create another children's show? Like maybe something that isn't even related to New Zoo Review? Something that's brand new?
I've got a couple on the burner, and we're looking to get that produced for sure. There's a lot of material out there that I haven't covered yet. I'm anxious to do it.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. So you got this great Facebook page, and it sounds like you're making appearances at places like Comic-Con and making personal appearances along those lines. How do you find that experience to be? Is that a lot of fun for you? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. That is the best because we get to meet.
Yeah.
Like we're meeting you today. I love meeting our New Zoo kids. It's wonderful. I love finding out what they've done for the last 50 years, what they're doing now, and it's just very gratifying. So it's a wonderful thing that Joanna has done for us to help us get in touch with the children that are now grown up, and some of them have grandchildren of their own.
Yeah.
So it's fun. I'm loving it. Yeah. I wasn't sure when she walked in and she started talking about this and doing some Comic-Cons and whatever. I just didn't know if I wanted to, but I'm all in. I'm loving every minute of it.
Yeah. It's really gratifying to see that the show has lived on.
Yeah. Absolutely. You
know, it's going to outlive us. I'm just thrilled about that.
So I have to ask, who is in the Freddy suit today? I'm sorry to peel back the curtain,
wait a minute. That's not a suit.
I mean, I have to give Freddy credit because whoever that is has been doing such a wonderful job hanging out,
sweating,
I'm sure, in the suit.
No, he is a wonderful, he is the essence of Freddy inside there.
All right.
That's all I'll say.
Good
and
enough.
One of the nicest people that we've met.
Okay, excellent.
If you notice, he's on top of every emotion. Everything is expressed in that face of his.
a couple of occasions I thought he was getting a little woozy back there, like, okay, this is, it's,
well, the heat's getting to him.
Yes, it's 110 in here, and I wish they would stop talking so I can, you know, get a cool beverage. But I have to say, this has been such an immense pleasure to get to know you and get to speak with both of you. And I'm more than happy to continue spreading the word about this wonderful and immensely unique and odd and inspiring television show. So congratulations.
Well, I might just mention that I would like everybody to know that our Facebook page is The New Zoo Review.
The
Because there's quite a few other Facebook pages that we don't have anything to do with, and that's all fine. Mm-hmm. But our page, the one that our daughter started, is The New Zoo Review.
Wow.
And the same on Instagram.
But I appreciate Bob having us on.
So thoughtful of you.
And it's just wonderful being able to talk to you.
The pleasure's all mine.
And in our minds, we're not icons. We're just a couple of parents that
now granny and granddad.
Yeah, now granny and granddad that just love kids.
Yeah.
And I'm just so thankful for the impact that we've had on kids.
Yeah.
And all I can say is I'm very thankful.
Thank you again. This has been an immense honor for me.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.